is Sportsfeld. We're back from a quick break. We promised you transactions, and transactions we have provided. It is July the 2nd. We've got so much player movement, it's going to be tough to confine this to the time frame we have.
The good thing is that no one's coming to us to Thank hear God. Every transaction that happens. God.
Yes, the landscape of the NBA has changed, except for Kawhi Leonard.
Who we still
No idea.
Wait.
No idea. Wait. If this were a playoff show, we would say take the temperature of the city.
I feel like we still can.
I think we should.
It is interesting.
Because I know this, if you play back the most recent episode, I am drunk on parade fever and saying Kawhi is 100% coming back and they're going to win the title. I feel less confident in that than I did at that point.
I will say that I feel more confident today than I did yesterday.
Yesterday was like doom.
Yeah.
I would say yesterday my confidence was like 10%.
Yeah. I would honestly, and I'm not saying this is a cop out. I mean this genuinely. I think it's at about 50% right now.
Same.
And I think it's like right in the he could stay, he could go. The report today of Chris Carter saying he's still undecided definitely helps that.
Yes.
But not sure why I'm deciding to trust Chris Carter more than sure. everyone else who spoke right. yesterday.
Unless he said what I didn't like and then he doesn't know
yeah.
anything.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it does seem Up like we don't even know if Kawhi's taken a meeting yet.
No idea.
With anybody.
It is a fool's errand to try to understand what Kawhi Leonard thinks.
Yes.
And anybody that tells you otherwise is projecting.
I mean, he's proven that time and time again. He proved it over and over this season.
Correct.
Just like from the no emotion to the emotion to the sarcastic laugh at the parade. It's just, you can't predict him. It's not like, he's not like Kevin Durant, where you like, based on who Kevin Durant is, I can kind of guess what he's going to do.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And I think that goes both ways because people will even say, you know, doesn't it feel like a Kawhi thing? That he would buck that and come back, right?
Yeah. So,
but also,
but does
like,
it?
But exactly right. No idea because he's never had the choice. He's never been in this spot. He didn't choose to get drafted by San Antonio. He didn't choose to get traded to Toronto. So we really, truly don't know. We have just random reports from people that we've never heard of before.
The thing that I been trying to keep in mind the last couple of days about all the Kawhi thing is, as always, as always, to basketball advice from Blake Murphy.
Yes.
Which was whenever you hear a report. Try to imagine who that's coming from.
Right.
And so far we have heard, as far as we know, we have heard nothing from Kawhi's camp and we've heard nothing from the Raptors.
Yes.
Everything coming out has been from the Clippers or the Lakers or anonymous sources or reporters or whomever. Not saying that necessarily is false.
Right.
But there is an entire side to the story that we have not heard a word from. And there is always a purpose to sources leaking information.
It's
I don't know what that purpose is necessarily.
Totally.
But these reports are out there. They're not just out there for fun.
Right.
Like there's a reason that they're released and who knows who released them.
Kawhi has done one thing consistently in his time with the Raptors, and that is put Raptors fans in uncharted territory with his actions and his like on court and off. Like we'd never been champions. We'd never been deep in the playoffs. And now we've never been in a spot where the biggest fish in free agency has the Raptors on his board July 2nd. And like it's the Raptors or the Lakers. Like that's so uncharted. It's been very interesting because as much as we and everybody that cheers for the Raptors has said, and not falsely, that winning the title and it doesn't matter. Now that the only thing left to do is figure out where Kawhi is going, it's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, and it's like to your point, like we've sort of talked about this throughout the playoffs of how we didn't really know how to react to a game seven in
Correct.
The playoffs. We didn't know how to react to a finals run. And now we don't know how to react to this either. Mm-hmm. And it's still true that big picture, you know, what Kawhi does doesn't really matter because the Raptors are NBA champions.
Correct.
And nothing will change that. But it's hard to not get wrapped up in it.
Yes.
And I don't think, whatever his decision is, I don't think it changes the fact that he gets a standing ovation the first time he comes back to Toronto if he leaves. I don't think it changes the fact that he is looked at as, you know, hero of the city, hero of the country, whatever you want to call it. Maybe it lessens it some. Amongst some people.
If he picks the Lakers and LeBron
it's
and
different.
AD, does
it's
it
different.
Change it?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Of course it does.
It's tough.
I don't think it changes it necessarily as much as I expected it to.
Right.
I definitely would have, any other year, the idea of going to join the super team, I'd be like, all right, that doesn't sit great. But he just won a title for us. So mm-hmm. like, even if he goes and joins LeBron and AD, and then the Lakers don't win the title, it's like, well.
Should have.
Yeah.
It's interesting because unquestionably.
In a way, actually. Sorry, just.
No, no,
the more I think about it, I feel like joining the Clippers might bother me more.
Not, there's no reason to join the Clippers anymore.
Like, if
totally
choosing the Clippers over the Raptors, it's like, why? Other than just you want to be in California.
Right.
And like, fair enough. But I think that bothers me. If he joins the Lakers, it's like, okay, you want to go win a bunch of rings.
Yes.
Fair. Power to you. But to join the Clippers, who have like 1.5 guys, when the even if like it's like 2 years in Toronto or 1 year in Toronto, and you can run back a championship team, to go to the Clippers, it's like, and like maybe the, and if your priorities are not winning and your priorities are just living and playing where you want to play and live, which is 100% a fair thing to do, I don't know. I don't want him to go to the Clippers.
It's
it just
very
seems
hard.
Stupid.
It's a very hard
it just
scenario.
Seems stupid.
Because you know, unquestionably, if he runs it back in Toronto, they are the 2020 title favorites. I don't think that's debatable. No team got so much better that it's like they are the title contenders.
The only one you could make the argument for is the Nets, but Durant's not playing, so it doesn't matter.
Correct. The issue that has sort of been in the back of my head and has gotten louder and louder is 2020 title. For sure, but the Raptors cap is built for basically the entire roster to come off the books after that. With Kyle probably being like 35 and not really knowing, the Raptors can only really offer, we'll have Siakam around and then a ton of cap space, which is good.
Yeah, but I don't think if Kawhi stays, he's signing a 5-year deal.
Interesting.
I think if Kawhi is staying in Toronto, it's 2 years at the most.
Like a 1+1 or a 2+1.
A 1+1 would be my guess, mm-hmm. which I'm also fine with.
Totally.
Because especially this year.
Yes.
Like if it sounds like we're sort of like contradicting ourselves by agreeing with ourselves.
No, it's totally.
But like we said all year, like if the Raptors win the title, it doesn't matter what Kawhi does. Still true.
Yes.
If he comes back for a year and they win a second title, it really doesn't matter what Kawhi is. You know what I mean?
Correct. Like, absolutely
there
correct.
there is a thing to this season with the, I don't know if I totally want to use the word parity because there's so many teams that are bad.
So wide open.
But it's so wide open. And if Kawhi comes back, as you say, they're the favorites. And then you win back-to-back titles. And then he goes to California.
Crazy.
Then it's like, well, like we already can't ask more of him. But then to win a second one, it's like, because then if you win in the NBA, in the like narrative structure of the NBA, to be in the conversation of like the great teams, you have to win two.
Yes. Sustained excellence.
Yeah. You can't be like, everyone enjoyed the 2011, 10 Dallas Mavericks, but no one remembers them.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So the Raptors are, and basically you said about the cap space and the roster construction and how everyone's coming off the books. If Kawhi leaves, the Raptors are in prime position to be a forgotten title winner.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
matter. Everywhere but here.
Everywhere but here. And it, which again, doesn't matter, but it kind of matters.
Yes. And I don't think it's wrong to have the dueling things of like, I'm satisfied with the championship, but I also would love it if Kawhi stayed. Like, no. Or I would also swear if he doesn't. Like,
yeah.
You can have both those opinions. Man, any other year of our lives, if we sat here on July 2nd and the Maple Leafs had made two trades the day before, including trading Nazem Kadri, that would be an hour in and of itself.
I didn't even know what happened last night at first.
Maple Leafs made two trades yesterday.
Yeah.
One with the Ottawa Senators for Cody Ceci, where they gave up Zaitsev, who have a great time there, and Connor Brown, who, listen, that's what they have lots of, is Connor Browns, for Cody Ceci. And the big one, Nazem Kadri, who on the show we have talked about quite a bit.
Yes.
Is now a member of the Colorado Avalanche in exchange for Tyson Barrie and Alex Kerfoot. Big time.
It is.
What does it mean for Kawhi is the question I have for you.
But it is kind of nuts how that's like.
It's bananas. This, like, would be the biggest thing in the world.
No one gives a shit.
If
no one cares.
If we could talk about it for 2 minutes straight, I'd be surprised. You and I online.
Yeah. Like it's hard. I also feel like it's also part of where the Leafs are as a team and like their roster and the last 2 years. It is hard with the Leafs, the way they are built. And this is also partially the Kawhi thing too. But the Raptors are a very good team. They just won a title. So you get like, obviously like we like to joke about the fact they add Matt Thomas and it's like, yes. It's fun and all, but like,
which we're going to get into,
which we will. But like Kawhi is the big fish. The Leafs are, other than the winning, sort of at the same point. And it's really hard to get excited about like less than John Tavares with the Leafs.
I think part of it, and I agree with that, part of it as well is now it's just about winning the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's hard to be super pumped or super deep into a move when we don't know how it affects them in the playoffs yet.
Because we know they're going to be top three in the division. 100-point
team is no longer exciting. Scoring a lot is no longer exciting. It's can you get it done in the playoffs? And we won't know that for a long time.
Yeah. It's funny. We kind of said when the Raptors won the title how, you know, it's going to be really hard to get worked up about game 50 in February.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel that way about the Leafs, just the opposite. Because it's going to be really hard to care about February hockey. It already is hard to care about February hockey. But now it's like, just we lock in your spot and then we'll check in with you when you in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly right. I think it's more about this, watching the Leafs this season is going to be more about the fringe guys. That is like, who out of the very few spots that we don't know a lot about, six defensemen, bottom six guys, who's going to force their way on the team? Because we know Tavares, we know Matthews, we know Marner.
He's staying.
We know Nylander, we know Riley, we know Muzzin, we know Anderson. There's so much we know that the regular season is going to be about some very, very few players that we're actually really, really, really have to know a lot
about. Which in a way is good, because I think that's the conversation that happens when you have a title contending team.
Yes, agreed.
But it's also boring.
A little bit.
Like it just is. Like the Leafs have like 4 days in the regular season to pay attention to. You have to pay attention to the, like, opening night, the trade deadline, the day they lock in their spot in the playoffs, and then where they finish.
Mine, we've gotten fat with success, haven't we?
Like, but it's true. Like, it's no longer we need to worry about
eating like kings.
But it's no longer that, like, we got to worry about a game 82 to make sure we squeeze. And like,
people still will.
And if we do, that's a problem
for sure.
So it is real hard to get worked up about the Leafs. Like, Mitch Marner will be news. That is worth getting
definitely
worked up about. I get that, but if it's not those guys, it's like, great. They've added good pieces to make them better.
And I think we learned a lot in watching the NHL last year in that, as David Alter famously said on this show, that he put a ton of stock into what happens after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I personally feel like I have learned that lesson, and I'm going to be, you know, you'll be making judgments on guys, but after the deadline, when they have that roster finalized, that's when I really want to see what they're made of.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I made the mistake. We all made the mistake last year. I remember it was like game 3 or 4 last year when they
beating the brakes off teams.
They put up like 7 on Chicago.
They're going to score a lot.
And I remember being like, oh, this is going to be such a fun year. And then like didn't watch hockey for 4 months. Because it's just kind of like, especially last year when they were locked in by December.
Yes.
It's just like, okay, cool.
Speaking of David Alter's intelligence,
yes,
and the way we think about the game,
they're talking about.
There's so much stuff in Toronto sports to get to. We've done a good job here in the last 10 minutes sort of bantering at how we feel. I think it's time to get a little more information. We have 2 phone calls lined up. We're going to call I want to call them experts.
Sportsfeld call-in show.
It's a call-in show. It would be hard. We love to have guests in studio, obviously. That's our preference. But on a day like this, it's hard to get one person to cover every base. So we're going to call 2 people, starting with Mr. David Alter, to talk to us about the Maple Leafs. So, Dave, we're now a day into free agency. The Maple Leafs have already made 2 deals. We'll start with the bigger one. Kadri and Connor Brown for Tyson Barrie. It feels like Tyson Barrie has been rumored to the Maple Leafs for like 5 years. So, is that crazy?
Yeah, I mean, he's always kind of been talked around and thrown around as this guy who kind of gets a little bit of cash and can easily be moved in Colorado, not contending that. Not that they were wasting his years, but that they could perhaps reset the button. But in this case, it's an expiring contract for stability and term that you get in Kadri. He's a great value for a second-line center role that he's going to play for them in Colorado. It seems like it's happened for a while, but it's not a surprise that it took this long, and it took the Leafs paying out a lot of money up front in a signing bonus in order to get stuff done and have trades that look like a great value, but fiscally they spent a lot to do it, but they can because they're the richest team in the league and they can do that.
So in sort of doing the preliminary reading about Barry and what we expect, is I think I've heard sort of an elevated Jake Gardner thrown around as a comparable. Is that a fair assessment, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, he's a puck mover, but he can throw the body around a little bit more too, and I think he's got more of an established responsibility. I think they're about the same in terms of maybe mistakes that they make on the ice. I think what happens is in Toronto is anytime Jake Gardner does something wrong, it always seems to be at the wrong time, and because of the Toronto media, we magnify it, and everyone seems to really get on Jake Gardner's case. But I think Barry's got a little bit more experience in that role. He's got a little bit more size to him too, which is going to play really well. But number one difference really is, and it's overdone a little bit, but the way Mike Babcock works his defense pair is the fact that he's going to be on the right side, and it's a bona fide right shot, right side defenseman that's better than what they've had on that side of the defense is really what's going to make the difference for the Leafs, and the buy-in from the coach to use them for top pairing minutes as well. So, like, it seems like little things that shouldn't matter, but they do, and I think that's what's going to make people really at peace with this decision.
So with with Barry now in the mix, like, obviously a guy who isn't, you know, your like stay at home kind of defenseman, another offensive guy, even though he's on the other side, the criticism sort of the Leafs a little bit, I think, is that they're one dimensional in terms of scoring and skill, which obviously this doesn't change, but if this improves that scoring and skill, and assuming that Mitch Marner is back, do you think it's a problem that the Leafs are this one dimensional, or is it just like, is the idea of let's just add as much skill and scoring as possible a valid or viable strategy in the 2019 NHL?
I think it works right now. And we've talked about this on the podcast about how the Leafs want to build their team and kind of where the direction of the game is going. So let's look at what happened last year. Last year, the Leafs were able to score the lights out against the other opponents for 80% of the season, pretty much cement their spot. And then when it came to playoff time, you know, grit and physicality and no penalties being called and all that stuff worked against the Leafs. So what happens in this case is the Leafs are not in any harm to add more offense, more skill, get out to more of a running start, and jump out high in the standings. And grit's not going to cost them the money. Like, that's stuff that they can figure out a trade deadline if they feel that they need to add some of those guys in those role spots. That will really cost nothing at that point because they'll have all the leverage that they can just add those guys later in the season for a minimal cap hit, salary amount, little trade that they have to do. They can get those guys in that spot, plug them in the third or fourth line or wherever you need them to be. And then that's how they'll fill out that all-around team. I think Dubas said it yesterday that he would love grit and size and all that stuff, but skill comes first. And you can kind of see why he feels that way. Things are trending in that direction. The fact that they were able to have wide margins of outscoring later in the season than in typical previous years, the trend is certainly leaning in that direction. So get all these guys and then tighten things up. And then they'll feel like those grit-sized things that they can add as small pieces won't really cost them that much. So why overpay for them now?
Speaking of smaller pieces, not just Tyson Barry in this deal, Alex Kerfoot there probably to fill some of that hole that you're going to have with Nazem Kadri being on the way out. Kadri, obviously a popular guy here. We talked about that at length with several guests. Had a rough ending to his last two seasons, did Kadri, but how do you see Kerfoot sort of fitting in and filling a spot probably in that bottom six?
Yeah, I think you know, he can put up points. I mean, he does score and he can contribute. I mean, without someone like a Connor Brown now, he can kind of easily fill into a similar spot to that. But at times has played center, that if they need him to adjust, that they can. So there's some versatility in someone like Kerfoot. I remember hearing a lot about him in in Colorado, and just the size, the sure speed and skill of the guy is something that the Leafs really were really happy about. I think they also feel that he's got this upside that hasn't been tapped yet, and if they put him in a spot where they put him with some more skilled players, that perhaps that can go even further into that spot. So I think those are good pieces. I thought it was really interesting. It's a small thing. I know we overanalyze and hype things a lot, but when the Leafs put out their press release that they made this trade, they actually mentioned Kerfoot first.
Yes,
they mentioned Barry. So I think that shows you how much they really saw from an analytical perspective and from an upside perspective that there's more untapped potential there. Plus with Barry, I mean, it is an expiring contract. We don't know what will happen. The Leafs seem to just be playing wasteful after July 1 to figure out cap and signing bonus and space. So they keep moving the goalposts that way, and they're able to add some pretty good pieces the way they've done it. So, yeah, I think they do see Kerfoot as someone who's going to be around for a while.
Speaking of added pieces, question for you. Next year, when the Leafs and the Bruins are in Game 7 again, does Jason Spezza play 25 minutes or, like, 19?
Yeah, so, I mean, this Jason Spezza experiment is very interesting to me because, it, by all accounts, yeah, he did take a hometown discount. I feel like he's not Patrick Marleau, but I feel like they brought him in to fill the Patrick Marleau role to some degree in that spot, and you really hope not. I really think that he's going to be in that role where it's a minimal risk, and if he's got something in the tank to play power play, maybe he gets a lot of minutes there. But I've got to think that they've learned some of the mistakes from the previous year, and they'll kind of let things play out and let their best players play. I know Mike Babcock's a very proud guy, and I think he knows better than anyone else the temperature and the feeling about where he stood and the fact that he survived this offseason. I think he knows that the leash is short. He's got different assistant coaches that are going to be a heavy influence. When you change up the assistant coaches on a head coach, that's your way of saying, we're not going to get rid of you, but this is one thing we're going to do, and it's kind of like the warning shot. So I don't think you're going to see, if there is another Game 7 against the Bruins or whoever it is, or whatever the case may be, I don't think you're going to see the same type of deployment.
And, you know, Spezza, obviously a famous former Ottawa Senator, at least did some deals with, they got into a bed with a rival. I misspoke earlier. Connor Brown was in the trade to Ottawa with Zaitsev for Cody Ceci. Another piece on the blue line. Do you expect Ceci to be a fairly heavily used piece or sheltered? How do you sort of see that filtering out in the top six and the back end?
Yeah, so I think right now, just given who he was acquired for and the current Leafs depth roster situation, I mean, it looks like a simple mix with Muzzin, at least right now. Like, it looks like you've got your Riley Barry top pair, then you've got Muzzin Ceci. You've got Dermott in November or whenever he comes back and playing in that final spot. And then a mix of different guys who can kind of slot in, some guys who they picked up in free agency. It looks like it's going to be a competition for one or two of those spots, at least straight out of camp. So, I mean, with Ceci, his problems are well documented. He's kind of like Jake Gardner in which he can make some mistakes at inopportune times. And he's got the offensive upside, which the Leafs like, but defensively there are some issues there, and they're going to have to work those out. But playing alongside someone like Muzzin and maybe mixing him in with Riley a little bit, if the Barry combination doesn't work out, just to spread the depth a little bit, to hold the other player on the count, might make some sense there too. I know that that was an issue in Ottawa. There was the whole thing with the expansion draft and trying to protect him. There a lot of people think really highly of him. He's going to have this 1 year contract done, put to paper as soon as they can get this Marner deal signed. And it's really a 1 year trial like it is with Barry. But like, you look beyond this year, they really have no clarity on D. They've got a short-term fix here, and they're going to kind of hope that everything else kind of plays out after.
CeCe's going to get eaten alive by the Toronto media, right? Like, he seems like a prime candidate for that, like, to your point of him having, like, sort of the Jake Gardner mistake comparables. He seems like an easy scapegoat for some of the lesser
members. Well, it's possible, but also, I mean, look, it's just the reality of the situation is the expectations are high in Toronto, given where they've been in the regular season for the last two years now. And I mean, in Ottawa, I mean, we knew what they were doing there. Those things can kind of fly. They're bottoming out here. He's got 1 year to prove himself. The pressure's on. And beyond him, there isn't much in that spot. So yeah, like there's going to be a little bit of scrutiny there, but also the fact that the Leafs were able to kind of get rid of not a problem contract, but that they were able to move a guy with 5-year term for someone in that spot and clear up the cap space maybe puts a little bit less of a damper on him. But I mean, expectations are high this year, and people are going to be quick, not necessarily media, but just whatever you see on social media, people just happy to just kind of, you know, melt at the first sign of, oh no, what do we get ourselves into? That just seems to be the mentality sometimes.
No, come on. Well, David, thank you. Is there anything else, Jake?
We talk a little bit. Marner get done?
Yeah. What does the Aho offer sheet mean for Marner, I guess, is the way to put it.
Oh, not much. If anything, I think that helps the Leafs, because the fact that Aho took such a low average annual value in that spot, I think, kind of tells you the market now for where Marner is going to be. I mean, Marner is still, I think, going to get more in the end. And the term 5 years is exactly what he wants. I don't know. It's really, really, really weird the way things are going there now. And as this goes more and more into the summer, if he doesn't sign, then I feel like it's going to be another one of those. Not Nylander to the same degree, but until training camp. I hope not, but hopefully that kind of gets fixed, because that'll be a real cap problem too if that goes into the season. That's a whole other nerdy thing I can explain for another day.
we will tap you for that another day. Appreciate it. David Alter, excellent. We are smarter for having spoken to you.
Always good to have people on who can explain what's happening in our city to us. As we are fans.
Wow. Well, I don't know if I can explain everything in the city, but yeah. There's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yes, they had a very busy weekend, and we expect some more action on the Maple Leafs before the summer is done. And if there is more moves, you can count on us calling David Alter to explain it all to you. Thank you very much, David.
Thanks, guys.
I feel a lot more informed than I did before we called David.
Yeah, it's nice. We were saying, oh, we have a talk with Leafs today.
David's got it.
Uh-oh. But it's going to be of David.
I feel really optimistic. I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't optimistic beforehand, but sort of a little unknown. And it feels a little like
it's nice to not just coast on like, they'll make the playoffs. It's nice to have some like concrete information as to why they'll make the playoffs.
How it'll actually work comes together. We have another, there's so much to talk about. And as you saw off the top, Kawhi Leonard is on our minds and lips pretty heavily.
It's funny how we've gone from the joke used to be like, oh, well, how does this affect the Maple Leafs, the only team that matters? Now it's, how does this affect the Raptors, the only team that matters?
And we got a stunner of a guest to talk about the Raptors. One of the biggest names in the Canadian podcast biz, I'd say.
I think so.
We've got from the Mike on Much podcast, which is a smashing success.
Yes. Canadian stalwart podcast.
Yes, that's, you know, if you're not counting us, then absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, after us, obviously.
A guy that I can't wait to have in the studio. I can't wait to have him in here.
That'd be a good one.
We're going to dial up Mike Veerman of the Mike on Much podcast, and we're going to talk Raptors because, I mean, geez, it's...
No shortage of
all I can
feelings
think about,
to talk
frankly.
About. Yeah. every report. Just read another one about how he had a meeting with the Clippers that went well. Of course, they're saying, no one's going to be like, God, yeah, we met
we blew
Kawhi.
It
was fucking terrible.
I mean, you and I would do that.
Well, yeah. But
we met with Kawhi and we blew it.
We also do a podcast for free, so.
All right. So let's have a good meeting of our own. Let's dial in Mike Veerman and talk a little bit Kawhi Watch.
Yellow.
Mike, first question. Can you believe it's already been 2 weeks since the parade?
I know, it's weird. It feels very like, at times it's like surreal. Like it feels like 1,000 years ago, and then sometimes it only feels like it happened yesterday.
It's crazy. Last night, I was saying, last night was sort of an unprecedented feeling. I've been in the sports media industry for a long time. I've never felt like an impending presence in a room, like the thought that Kawhi news could drop at any minute last night. How have you been dealing with the indecision of Kawhi Leonard so far?
Oh man, it's like it's bad. Like I was in Buffalo for Canada Day weekend with my wife and kid, and I was glued to my phone. And obviously, all of us saw that like NBA free agency went insane on that at 6 o'clock, sort of immediately. And we were all just obviously our interests are tied up entirely with Kawhi. And last night in particular, like you're saying, I was going down like the deep, deep Twitter, sort of like looking up anonymous Laker Twitter sources and stuff. It was a nightmare. It was the worst. I think Gourmet Spud, who I follow on Twitter, said something like, "This is Woj just please announce this is death by 1,000 cuts." That's how I felt as a Raptors fan watching sort of the tide turn toward the Lakers getting him last night.
It's also that like it's the NBA is like it's just constant. Like Kawhi, the trade was announced at 4:30 in the morning, so I was going to bed last night and was like, I should check my phone one last time in case some news drops at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
but
how are you feeling confidence wise in terms of he stay, he go?
Well, I just saw like an hour ago that Chris Carter tweeted that he hadn't made a decision yet, and anyone to think that the Lakers were ahead of the Clippers or Raptors would be wrong.
It's like a breath of fresh air.
It was like, it felt like a small Band-Aid or something. This is my analogy for this, because a lot of my friends, we've been in these text groups, and everyone's like, oh, man, Kawhi's gone. I said, listen, maybe Kawhi has one more miracle for us, and right now, metaphorically, the ball is bouncing on the rim, and we don't know if it's going to go through the hoop, but we've got 4 bounces here, and it's like, until it's announced, it's still on the rim, and I think the longer it goes, that can only be a good thing for the Raptors.
What are your thoughts on sort of the idea? Like Zubes and I are sort of talking about this on the way in today about how we won the title last year. So what big picture? What he does, like whatever, like fine, thank you for everything, send him on his way. But how quickly it's shifted in 2 weeks from that idea of like whatever he decides is totally fine with the title, and now we're all just like stressed and waiting for the decision, and how quickly that can sort of like flip in Raptor fan minds.
Yeah, I think in the long run, we're eventually going to net out at thank you for the memories, Kawhi. This was spectacular. Banners hang forever and all that stuff. And I honestly think if it was between the Clippers and the Raptors, fans would be a little bit more comfortable or at least sort of at peace in some ways. I think that it's the Lakers and LeBron and the Wizards making that ridiculous trade when 28 other teams were like, no, we're not trading with the Lakers to help them open that max slot. That all came upon us very quickly. I don't think Raptors fans, especially casual fans, ever imagined the Lakers were in play in that way. So that, I think, has added a level of anxiety where it's like, you don't mind losing to the Clippers if he's going home. But if you lose him to a super team after we all just sort of spent a couple of years hating Kevin Durant for joining up, it's like, that feels uncomfortable. I'll personally be fine with it, but I can see why it hurts a little more than maybe the Clippers.
Speaking of Kevin Durant, the league shifted dramatically in the last 2 days. Just sort of your feelings on how the East looks now with what Brooklyn is putting into place and the Celtics and the Sixers and a minute to laugh at the Knicks as well.
I think that the East, a lot of people are like, man, the East got crazy good. Obviously, Brooklyn's going to, they'll be competitive. I mean, they were, an 8 or 7 seed already. They were 7 seed, I believe, this playoffs. They'll be, similar, a bit better with Kyrie, but we don't think Durant's coming back for a year, so that will be interesting. DeAndre doesn't move the needle. I think Jared Allen's probably better at the center anyway for the money. I think Philly's really interesting. They went super big. Obviously, Horford joining was shocking. Jimmy Butler in Miami, they got a star, but I don't really know what that does with what's around him. The Celtics are kind of interesting with Kemba. I don't think they're scaring anyone any more or less. So to me, the East feels sort of the same until we see what Philly can do with that huge lineup. And I guess what Kyrie can do with Brooklyn. Am I forgetting anyone else? Milwaukee, obviously they lost Brogdon. They'll still be dangerous. But I mean, who did they get? Wes Matthews or somebody like that? I'm not like, ooh.
To me, they're exactly the same.
The Pacers made some moves. The Pacers brought in Brogdon and TJ Warren. It's very interesting to see how this is all going to shake out.
It does feel, though, sort of like the East is sort of like everyone's sort of on an even playing field except a Raptors team with Kawhi, which I think also makes this whole thing harder for everyone because it's like
it's right there.
If Kawhi comes back, we're the favorites again.
100%.
Totally agree.
Yeah, it's interesting depending on where he goes, because you could also make the argument that this is, depending on Kawhi, shaping up to be the most wide open NBA season in maybe 2 decades.
Well, just with like the Warriors not being
since before the Heat teams. Yeah. Like, when's the last time we're now in July 2nd and we don't know who the NBA Finals favorite is? Like, that's sort of crazy.
It's a great feeling, honestly, like considering where we've been for the last, like, what feels like a half decade or even more with that Heat team, like you said. And I think people outside of Lakers fans are really hoping, like, Clippers or Raptors, because it will be the first time in years, like you said, that there's going to be, like, true parity in the league. And it's not like, oh, here's a super team. It's kind of the end of super teams if he doesn't choose the Lakers. And I mean, obviously, being like a, you know, a psychologist from afar that knows nothing about Kawhi other than what I read, like the rest of you guys, it's like, doesn't it seem like that it would align with his personality that he would kind of zig when everyone else would zag? Like, I feel like he, like, it feels like it would be off sort of personality or brand for him to join a super team, but maybe that's wishful thinking on my part.
It also feels to me, and I don't know if you feel the same, but like the Kawhi-ness of it all is, and from a Raptors perspective, it's like, because it's so wide open now and all these teams have made moves, it feels like I want us to be included in that. Like, if Kawhi comes back, then we're involved in this big picture of the new NBA. And like, we still might be anyway, or we are next year, but
no, we won't like this. If Kawhi goes, we'll sort of be what the Pacers were this year, where it's like, oh, they're nice, they're like a 6-7 seed and scrappy, but no one will be talking about us, and that's fine. I mean, it's a reality situation, but it's been nice to feel what the sun feels like from, you know, a national and international media standpoint for a full season. It's such a foreign feeling. What do you guys think about Danny holding off on signing?
I think waiting for Kawhi is what I would do if I were in his shoes. He's basically set himself up that he's either going to be a Laker or a Raptor as well. I mean,
or a Mav, it sounds
or like. Maybe a Mav. But the price he's going to be at, which I assume will come in between 10 and 15 million, that's above the mid-level exception. So that's going to be a limited amount of teams. I think there's a chance that he ends up on the Lakers. One way, like, there's a chance that the Raptors bring Kawhi back and he says, well, the Lakers can pay me now 15 million.
So we have his bird rights though. So we can exceed the cap to sign him.
It depends how much the Raptors want to be in the tax, but I feel he's either going to follow Kawhi or be a Laker or Mav.
I think if Kawhi comes back, Danny comes back and they just run the whole thing back again.
And I also will say, I don't know that if Kawhi comes back, not having Danny is that huge of a loss. Frankly,
yeah, we have Matt Thomas now.
Well, we have Matt Thomas and you know, Van Vliet showed that he can be a rotation guy who defends, wings, and controls the offense and does the stuff Danny Green does. Danny Green's a great player, but that cliff is pretty steep if he stops doing one of the two things he does very well. If he's not hitting threes and he's just a guy running baseline to baseline and defending, you can find that.
Well, you have OG there to sort of pick up the defense.
Exactly right.
OG's back, yeah.
Yeah. So you can find what he does if he's not hitting threes. I think it's an interesting piece.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested in the idea that he would hold off, though. I mean, it's got to be really difficult to, like, especially if the Mavs are offering you some crazy contract or the Clippers. Yeah. It's like, I mean, and I don't necessarily think he knows anything, because I think him and Kawhi are probably more coworkers. I think Kawhi is very tight circled, as everybody keeps reporting. But I think it's interesting that Danny's like, you know what, I'll just keep letting these other guys get their contracts, and I'm going to wait because running it back is important to me. And who knows if Masai went to him and said, hey, stick it out. Like, if Kawhi comes back, we'll set you up with, like, 2 years at 22. Or if Kawhi leaves, we're not going to leave you hanging. We'll give you a 1 for 15 or something. Mm-hmm. Just hang tight. You know, like, it's just very weird to me. A lot of NBA players wouldn't wait around to get paid.
And a lot of them haven't. It's sort of crazy to, like, the Lakers. If the Lakers don't get Kawhi, I have no idea what that team looks like next year.
Oh, Lakers and Clippers are both screwed money-wise, like, if Kawhi picks the Raptors. I mean, even if he picks one of the LA teams, the other one is in bad shape.
The Lakers are going to be, like, sure, you have LeBron and Davis, but then it's like you're relying on Kyle Kuzma to be three other players. It just,
and everybody's gone. They're going to have to sign, like, Cousins to a 1 year 20, and it's like, okay, DeMarcus, that's kind of interesting, but that's kind of all that's left. It feels like he's waiting around to see what Kawhi does too, because then he'll probably either go to the Clippers or the Lakers. Whoever Kawhi doesn't go to, that's probably where DeMarcus is.
Cousins, the consolation prize.
Yeah.
Man, one last thing. We just talked to David Alter about the Maple Leafs. Can you believe that we'd had a July 1st where the Maple Leafs made two trades and everyone is still like, what is the Raptors' biggest star going to do in free agency? Unbelievable.
It's wild. It's never been this way in my whole life as a Raptors fan. I guess this is what happens when you win a championship is like everybody knows. And I think, I don't know, man, like, I don't think we ever had a true superstar sit, like maybe since Vince. But obviously, Vince never reached these heights, didn't win a championship. But it is wild to see this city, you know, Kyle Dubas is over there making moves, and everybody's just sitting around waiting on Kawhi. Can't even get the first the headline on all the sports shows. It's wild.
It truly speaks to sort of like the star wattage of the NBA and like individual guys in the NBA compared to even like obviously a guy like Nazem Kadri is a well-known guy in the city.
Yeah.
But then you go, you know, you widen that scope, and it's like, who's Nazem Kadri in a way?
I know. I mean, maybe it was on Twitter more, but I was too busy just looking at anonymous Lakers Twitter.
Totally.
With, like, you know, 20,000 followers, like a crazy. I was like that guy from A Beautiful Mind last night, just trying to put together all the shit. It was not a happy time. It was very dark, dark, dark place for me.
Well, that's the story. Well, I'll put you on the spot here. You got one shot at this. He stay or he go?
Oof. The ball is bouncing on the rim like that Philly shot in Game 7, and I think it goes through the hoop. Kawhi Leonard stays. Might as well feel optimistic about it, because if he does go, I have all summer to be sad. So I'm going to be positive.
It's the dagger.
And if he goes, the Raptors are still NBA champions.
Absolutely right.
That's right. Banners hang forever.
Exactly.
That's Mike Veerman, the Mike on Much podcast. Mike, thank you so much. We can't wait to get you in the studio sometime and really chop it up in person.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, buddy. Man, Mike is good at podcasting.
Yeah.
Really good.
It's a pro.
Humbling.
It's when a pro is in the room.
There's nothing,
or not in the room. But.
There's nothing we can do. But wait to see what Kawhi does.
I think what I've decided from all our talking today and us currently still looking at our phones, refreshing our
Nonstop.
Feeds for new news.
Nonstop.
Is that nobody knows anything.
I will say really, this.
That's what I truly believe.
For 100%.
Not even like our like feelings of he stay or he go. I truly believe that nobody knows anything about where he's going.
If you need an indication as to where we are in this search, the latest big piece is that the Clippers had a meat and cheese platter with more than 10 dipping sauces. No idea if that's a serious report or not.
Exactly. Could be a joke. Could easily be a joke.
But 10 sauces, I'm into that. That would help me a lot. Truth, like blatantly cards on the table. You bring me into a room with meat, cheese, and 10 dips.
You give me a giant charcuterie board with a bunch of dips.
I'm listening.
Like my two favorite things.
I'm listening.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What else do you have, right?
I do know. He's a chicken wing man, though, so maybe he wasn't impressed.
But I feel like a chicken wing man... A variety of sauces is the way to go, right?
Yeah, that's true. I just love to dip. I just love dips.
I gotta say, Lakers bring probably the best player of the generation, plus the best talent in a big man we've seen in a generation in AD. The Raptors bring, you know, cultural understanding, a great organization, and the defending championship. The Clippers bring ten different dipping sauces.
You can only get that at...
That's tough.
Local grocery store.
That's tough. That is a tough choice.
I mean, it would give me pause.
I'm stunned.
Because they all come with a bunch of money.
10 sauces? So,
it's a lot of sauces.
Jeez.
We'll see how many sauces the Lakers... if we do not get a report on the amount of dipping sauces at the Lakers and Raptors meetings, the media is failing.
I'm picturing Masai now knowing that they have the last meeting. Like,
it's really
in a grocery store being like, what sauce did he not have?
Yeah.
What can we give him? Like, what's a Canadian-only sauce?
Masai's decided to go to Whole Foods instead of
right.
Loblaws now.
What can we get from Uncle Dennis? What kind of sauces this dude likes?
Yeah, you know what it is.
Let's hear it.
It's that St. Louis dill dipping sauce.
Mm, interesting. This seems like the perfect chance to transition to the mailbag because...
We're talking about food. So
we're talking sauces.
We're out of sports now. Vince, let's go talk about something silly.
All we can do is wait anyway.
Yeah.
So... Let's get into it. We're going to open up the mailbag after this. All right, enough seriousness.
Yeah.
Let's get absurd, shall we?
Sure.
Well, not absurd. Anyway, first question in the mailbag. This is transaction season. What's the most exciting type of transaction as a fan? When your team signs an FA or when your team makes a trade?
Free agent for sure.
Free agent for sure.
For sure. You're losing something in a trade. Free agent's all gain.
Wow. Also, I had say trade, that, no question.
So also, as we're just focused on the Raptors, we've seen lots of trades.
Yeah.
Not seen a lot of free agents.
Right.
So the one you don't see more is more exciting.
Interesting. Wow. Was the Kawhi Leonard trade not a seminal moment in the franchise?
It's Kawhi. It's different.
For me, it's trade, no question.
Really?
I think it's 100% because you have two things to do. You have the analysis of what does this new guy bring.
And what have you lost?
And what did the guy we're losing?
I think it's also context dependent.
Sure.
I think a free agent signing first week of July is usually more excited than a trade first week of July. But a trade deadline deal is more exciting than any free agent signing.
Mm.
Exciting a midseason trade when you're like the Marc Gasol trade.
Yeah.
Was like, okay, we're going for it.
I think it's probably a trade, but I can see your rationale. For me, it's trade because you also get the beauty of a opened up roster spot, which, ooh, baby.
True. But ooh, baby. In a free agent signing, there is the implied interest
right.
in joining your team as opposed to
okay.
the forced joining of your team.
It's sort of if you look at the recent Maple Leafs thing with the, you know, had they signed Cody Ceci, I don't think anybody's, yeah. But they got rid of Zaitsev.
I suppose. You're
just like, ooh, there's layers to this. Or, you know, excited to bring in Tyson Barrie, but you have to also temper it with, we lost Nazem Kadri.
Okay, I'll give you this.
Okay.
Complicated trades are more exciting. Like a 7-person deal
yes.
or a multiple team deal, way more exciting than free agency.
I feel like you hear more rumors about trades too.
Yes, you do.
Free agency is sort of like player plans to sign with X. Although, as we say that, we're waiting. We're refreshing nonstop about Kawhi Leonard.
Again, there are exceptions to every rule.
Exactly right. But I think in a general term, I would say more exciting is a trade.
Maybe, okay. I think I'll give you more exciting, but I think that free agency is more rewarding as a fan.
Okay.
The feeling of a free agent signing is like,
you feel wanted.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Also, some like no guy I've never heard of signs with the Mavericks, but you see Shams pop up in my feed. My heart fucking jumped. Kevin Looney signing last night, by the way. Oh my.
Bullshit.
Woj having a tweet that and KL. Just saw the KL. Ugh.
My brain Nightmare. Was fried Nightmare. Last night. Fried. One of those, like, how the hell did it become 11:45 p.m. nights?
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, it's Canada Day. Jeez. We have three questions in a row about iced coffee. So people want to talk about iced coffee with me, which is totally fine. I love iced coffee. Nick Van Exel was right.
Yeah, iced coffee's the best.
Why did nobody beat my door down?
I've been telling you this for literally years.
I've drank iced coffee every day since I had it for the
first time.
Iced
coffee is so much better than non-iced coffee.
I mean...
No, it is. It straight up is.
I love it.
It is a quicker caffeine delivery system.
It is way easier to drink fast.
It tastes better.
It is way easier to drink fast. No question about that. I can just smash it. And
yeah.
I go,
oh, yeah,
yeah, I feel good about myself.
I can chug an iced coffee and be like, that was great.
So what I've been doing is, you know, two coffees.
Of course.
You got to. So the first coffee goes immediately into the fridge, and then I brew a second coffee and drink it right away.
So what I've been doing is we only have a Chemex for coffee, where you have to like pour the water over.
Fancy.
So what I've been doing is put a bunch of ice cubes in the Chemex in the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So then, because you have to pour hot water over to make it work. But then the ice in the Chemex cools it down a
Doesn't
little
it
bit.
Melt too fast?
No, because it cools it down enough that it just lowers the temperature. Then you put the ice cubes in your mug.
Yes.
And you poured like the lukewarm coffee into the ice and it doesn't melt the ice in your mug and you have yourself a nice iced coffee.
The answer to the question of how long do you leave your coffee in the fridge so that it can be an effective iced coffee? It's usually like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You just need to get
It's got to be recognizably cold.
Yeah. You just need to get it not like super hot.
I will say, I do think there's a difference between cold coffee and iced coffee.
Okay.
Because I think part of the, at least for me as a person who.
I had cold brew this weekend and didn't like it at all.
Yeah. So I think iced coffee is. As a person like me who is affected by caffeine greatly.
Yes.
And it gets me jittery and weird.
That's what it's for, baby.
When you have the ice in there to add a little bit more water to dilute the caffeine a little bit, like I could drink like 5 iced coffees.
Right.
If I have one big mug of hot coffee, I'm a fucking mess. But if I have like 5 iced coffees, I'm fine. And so I also think the ice and like the added water to the added cold water to the drink makes for a different taste than just a cold coffee.
Okay.
Two different things.
I think that's well analyzed. I'm still so new. I have only had one cold brew and I didn't like it very much. I had it at Starbucks.
Yeah, I'm not a big cold brew guy. Just give me a nice coffee.
Coffee over ice, baby.
Yeah.
Give it to me. Put it in my fucking mouth. I can't wait to have a nice coffee after this. Truthfully, I'm going to do it basically immediately. But yeah, I do 20 minutes to half an hour. It doesn't need to be that. Again, it just needs
to
be.
Do you then pour it over ice? Yes. Just in the okay.
It just needs to be not hot.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't melt the ice. Yeah. Because then you're just watering down coffee. Yes. And making it a shitty temperature.
Yes.
But you want ice cold coffee. And then once it's in the ice, bam.
My only problem.
Bam.
So my only problem with iced coffee, which is not really a problem because it's also what's a great thing about iced coffee, is I drink them way too
quick. You just crush them. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't like buying iced coffee because I'm like, I spent $4 for like, same thing. Like, I don't like buying a cold drink from the store because it's like, I spent $4 to drink something in like 20 seconds.
Mm.
And I feel the same way. Well, I like making an iced coffee because then it's like, whatever, I'm making coffee anyway.
Yeah.
But like going to Starbucks, like spending $4 on an iced coffee, it's just like, I drank that in less than a minute.
Now does seem done. A little absurd. I've been told.
They also put too much ice in if you buy an iced coffee. You have to ask for less ice.
I've been told McDonald's does $1 iced coffees.
So I would say.
And they have pretty good coffee.
As someone who like. Was extremely skeptical. McDonald's coffee is pretty good. For like cheap ass shitty coffee, it's pretty good.
Coffee corner, baby. You gotta love it.
I'll take McDonald's over Tim Hortons coffee.
Yeah, 100%. One of the craziest things to me is that people are like, Tim Hortons coffee is great.
It sucks.
I can get missing it if you weren't here, but like I don't look forward to Tim Hortons coffee.
I didn't even get missing if you weren't here. Like what? Dunkin' Donuts is
the cultural.
Like Dunkin' Donuts also sucks, but it's like the same. You can get the same shitty coffee in another country.
Now, are you a black coffee person?
I used to be.
Okay.
But now I physically can't anymore.
So when you have iced coffee, here's the thing. The reason I relented on iced coffee for so long is whenever I see iced coffees, they're like that light brown, which is not how I enjoy my coffee. I need coffee black and bitter, but you can have black iced coffee and it tastes fine.
I can do black. I absolutely cannot do a black hot coffee anymore. Hmm. It'll just like the caffeine hits me. It depends where it's from. Like you shitty diner coffee that's half watered down anyway. Can drink that black, that's fine. But like if I'm making a coffee, a black coffee will absolutely make me go insane. But an iced black coffee I can do, but now I'm used to having a little bit of milk in there.
Mm.
And I don't even like milk, but I do like it in a nice coffee. Something nice about, and you know what I will say? I'm a big fan of a nice latte.
Really?
I'm not.
That surprised me actually.
I'm not a latte.
It's gotta be delicious.
I'm not a latte guy when it's warm. Mm-hmm. Like I like just an Americano. With a little bit of milk for like a warm coffee or just coffee with milk. But an iced latte is a very nice time.
That's how you reset a show after 40 minutes of like deep free agency and trades.
Real deep coffee talk.
Here's how we actually feel about something we know about.
Yeah.
Which is iced coffee. Here's a great question. In a world where they are not brothers and don't know each other at all, who would you rather be friends with, Frasier or Niles Crane? That's a tough one. They both have
significant flaws.
Because like, I feel like my instinct is to say Niles.
Mine is too.
But I really think after like 2 days, you'd be like, I cannot talk to this dude anymore.
But knowing people with siblings as we do, how much of their negative idiosyncrasies are based on being brothers with each other.
It's true. And he's, Frasier.
Seems like the bulk of Niles' issues is being Frasier's brother.
Correct. Because Frasier is... almost every single episode revolves around Frasier's desire to go up a step in society.
Yes.
And I feel like being Frasier's friend, unless you provided that step, he would probably not treat you all that well.
That being said, Frasier on Cheers.
He's an everyman. He's a bit of an everyman.
Yeah. Lovely guys to have a beer with.
And you don't ever really see Niles as that, eh?
No.
Yeah.
I just feel like Niles is probably always going to be... I feel like Niles would treat you better as a friend.
Right.
But he's also going to drive you fucking crazy all the time with his, like, Niles-dom.
I tweeted about this the other day, but I was watching the show, Frasier, obviously, and had the realization that, like, I would love Bulldog's show. The Gonzo Sports Show. I would love that show. I know that I would, and yeah. I'm not afraid to admit it.
You don't feel good about it, but you would.
He would. People would call in, and he would be mean to them, and it would be hilarious.
Doesn't sound like sports radio.
I love it. So my answer, if I could cheat, would be Bulldog, but I know that isn't fair.
I think my answer.
I think it is Frasier.
I'm hedging. I'm saying Frasier from Cheers.
Okay.
Or just younger Frasier is my answer.
Okay. When he had the curls kissing the back of his neck, mm-hmm. The hairstyle I want so badly. I think that's fair. I agree that the first gut instinct is Niles, but the more you think about it, the more you're like, I don't know that I could do that for an extended period of time. Here's the big question. Iceman, Matt Thomas. the new Raptors killer.
We're already calling him Iceman.
That's his Twitter handle.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Amazing.
The Iceman, Matt Thomas.
Oh, then yeah, I'm all in on calling him
the real shooter, Matt Thomas.
For sure.
3-year minimum deal, your new 14th man. Blake Murphy wants to know, over under 44.5% on threes this year. I will say that puts him top five in the league. That makes him like Seth Curry.
I'm saying over purely because he's not going to shoot enough for it to go down that much.
And let me say this. Great question, Blake Murphy.
Of course.
And we love Blake more than
we love ourselves, I think.
That's for sure. True. Not even close. And a lot of people are probably just now, because the Raptors are so popular, getting into like reading Blake regularly.
Yeah.
And I totally get it. And I totally respect if your bag is to read about the championships and to read about the parade and what it all means. The middle fastball for Blake Murphy
is Matt Thomas.
Is Matt Thomas. The 14th to 16th man who might play for the 905 and will definitely be at Summer League. Oh, baby.
But here's the thing. If more and more people are getting into reading Blake, that's just going to elevate the discourse in Raptors 100%, 100%. If everyone's reading about true field goal percentage, we're going to be an educated fan base because of Blake.
As he has said to me, anybody can write about Kawhi Leonard. That's easy. You and I can talk about Kawhi Leonard. Anyway.
We just did.
We did it. But what does Matt Thomas possibly bring? Oh, baby. I can't wait.
Let's get into the real cap implications of Nando DeColo maybe coming back to the Raptors.
Summer League. Get ready for it. Yeah. Watching Summer League to watch Matt Thomas chuck just threes. Chuck. Boom.
Here's the thing. He's definitely not going over 44.5 in Summer League because he's going to take 40 a game.
He's a volume shooter, baby. Matt Thomas. I'm into it. The Iceman. Matt Thomas.
99% unguarded shooting percentage. That's a thing.
44.5% is high.
That is high. I think I'm saying 47.
Boy, oh boy. That's basically Danny Green.
Yeah, but with half the like attempts.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Why not? He's the Iceman.
Yeah.
He's a long-range bomber.
You know what? It might be under because he might have a lot of attempts for all the games just to fill in when Kawhi isn't playing.
True. Load management, Matt Thomas. Over, yeah. Easy buckets. What's your opinion on the home run derby, and what's the best performance you can remember?
Was it Brady Anderson who went crazy that one year?
I think my answer would probably be Josh Hamilton. He had like a ridiculous year, and it was like a great story, yada yada.
My thoughts on the home run derby is that it's fun.
It's fun.
It's gotten less fun the older I get.
Right.
It used to be like appointment viewing.
So I like the slam dunk competition.
Yeah. I'm not sure I've actually watched the home run derby in like 6 years.
Spoiler for you. They hit a lot of home runs.
Yeah. The highlights are great.
Yeah.
The highlights of the home run derby are excellent.
You know, I think...
Did they change the format recently?
Yeah. You get a certain amount of time.
Because like that's time... Okay.
It's not
time
10 outs anymore.
Because there was a period of time there where you'd have like... Between out 7 and 8 would take 45 minutes.
Yeah. What I think, and I agree with you that the older I get, the more I enjoy it. What I think happens is when we were young, I'll just like any sports I can get my hands on.
Yeah.
And now.
And like the spectacle of the event and like.
It's super. It's still fun to watch guys crack dingers, but the amount of time that we've been working and talking about sports and the amount of sports that how it's like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week now. To me, having a day off of all that stuff is more vital than like I got to watch Todd Frazier hit 20 bombs.
Here's how I'm going to watch the home run derby this year. I'm going to watch Vlad.
Yeah.
And that's it.
100%.
If Vlad goes out in the first round, I'm not watching the other rounds.
And on this.
Even in the first round, I'm not watching the other guys.
100%.
I'm watching Vlad.
I think this is going to be very good for Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Yeah.
He hasn't been superb.
He's definitely been 19.
Yes.
Or 20 or whatever.
100%. I think it's a good sign that he said yes, even though he hasn't had a great year. I think it shows that he wants to be a face.
Yeah.
He wants to...
He likes that moment we were talking about with him.
He likes to entertain. He likes to put on a show. I think this is going to be good for him. Hopefully he does very well because having watched him in batting practice, the home run derby style fits him nicely.
I hope he just hits a couple of just like...
Because like when it's in his wheelhouse, it's nothing for him to hit home run.
Yeah.
So I expect a good show. And for it to do well. Here's a good question. Would you prefer to not have to carry keys if it meant your fingerprints opened doors?
No. So phones have the fingerprint thing now?
Yes. Do you use it?
I use it, but like half the time it asks me for my fucking password anyway.
Mm.
And so I just feel like with a door, like this is going to be a stupid sentence.
It's a stupid question, so.
Locks are already such a pain in the ass in my life. You sometimes the key just like gets a little stuck or like all locks sort of turn differently. You know what I mean? we're adding like bullshit fingerprint technology. It's just going to be a pain. Also, I don't trust it at all.
What part of it don't you trust?
I feel like there's got to be a way to like, I feel like it's easier to break in when like a fingerprint scanner than on like a solid like lock.
Really?
I'm probably wrong.
I'll say this.
I'm going to preface that by saying I'm probably incorrect
on that. One of my takes that is I no longer believe that every fingerprint in the world is different. That's not true. I just think that's something
they
tell you.
They do all look, they look really
bullshit.
Similar.
Like, right? Like bullshit. Every, there are billions of people in the world. Look at how big your thumb is. There's no way.
Yeah.
There's
no,
there's like,
you know what?
20 billion different.
Is this our new like gematria thing?
100%.
Like, fingerprints are actually
the,
not.
Cause the thing that people equate it to is every snowflake is unique. Bullshit.
No, it's not. Bullshit. That one is bullshit. That
there's
one is
no
absolutely
way that's
bullshit.
True.
I can see them. They look exactly the same.
There's no way that's true. There's no way that every fingerprint is different. That's a lie.
I like it. I like it.
You would have to have analyzed every fingerprint ever for that to be true.
Yeah.
Two fingerprints can be close enough.
Yeah. To open a scanner? Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not buying it.
No.
Prove me wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I like about 2019 is you can just not believe things that are pretty clearly true.
You can just, and just say them and be like, this
is how
it is. I
don't believe that. That's.
If you are.
That's my belief.
If you have enough conviction.
100%.
And you're a straight white male.
And you're loud.
You can make anything true.
That's my beliefs and I respect it.
That's why we're all going to die probably soon.
Fingerprints are the same.
Oh, we're so doomed. Oh my God, we're doomed.
Being allowed to be dumb as hell. it's the truth. What piece of clothing, this is one that might be a tough answer. What piece of clothing do you like to wear that is furthest removed from your typical style?
I mean, I haven't really changed my style in 12 years.
Our
so.
Typical style is so like...
it's so boring.
They're both just black t-shirts with different logos in the front. Right?
And then like...
Yours are bands, mine are wrestling.
Yeah,
like,
and then jeans.
I don't...
Or shorts.
Differ from that a ton.
No. I also don't like really wear... I don't... So I've had a discussion with Cassie, my fiance.
It's hard because
a ton.
Typical style is not...
Where it's like the idea of wearing something that's so... It makes me so uncomfortable. Mm. And Cassie's argument is if you wear anything with enough confidence, you can
Correct.
Sell it. Which is probably true.
Charisma, uniqueness, talent, and nerve.
There you go. You flip two of them, but yeah.
Yes.
And it smells something.
Yes.
Do you not pick up on that?
I do. Yeah. I realize now.
There you go. But oh yeah, we didn't even get into Drag Race.
We'll get there,
we?
Baby. Okay. It's a long summer.
All right. But like, I don't have the clothing confidence to wear things outside of my style at all, ever. So I don't know if I have answered this question because I just wear the same thing all the time.
It's tough because we're not... rich or famous.
Yeah.
So like the idea of having a typical style is like,
I definitely have that conversation with myself sometimes. Like if I were to like get a really good acting gig and like have a bunch of money, I would like change up my style, but no, I wouldn't.
No,
no chance. I just wear nicer jeans.
You'd have better versions of the things you already
yeah.
like. Absolutely correct.
Like a friend of mine was wearing like a really nice, we were out last weekend and he was wearing a really nice, like short sleeve button up and nice shorts and like colorful and it looked great. And I was like, man, that looks great. I wish I had that fashion sense. And I was like, even if I did,
yeah,
probably wouldn't wear it.
I bought a bunch of floral shirts this summer.
So yeah, you did.
I was like, I gotta buy some new clothes because I didn't like anything I used to own. But it doesn't, to me, that isn't different from my normal style. It just
no.
has become my normal style.
Exactly.
So I don't really have a good answer for that. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't like wearing sandals. How about that?
Yeah. Oh, fuck sandals.
Ugh.
Out of here.
Ugh. Anywhere, ever.
No.
No, thank you. I wear shoes to the beach. I don't care.
I wear shoes to the beach. Like, I don't go to the beach all the time. I wear shoes. Yeah, whatever. Just don't wear socks. It's just as fine.
Too true. Okay, wait, basically one more.
All right.
If the Blue Jays, I mean, we've been into this before, but we'll get into it again. If the Blue Jays were to get a brand new stadium and there were no limits on where it could be, what neighborhood would you put it in?
On the water.
On the water is correct.
I would put it exactly where Amsterdam Brewhouse is right now.
Yes. Facing the water.
Yeah.
If not on the island itself, which would be wild.
Yeah.
The whole island could be the Blue Jays facility.
I feel like if the flooding would not work.
Correct.
And also getting there would be a fucking nightmare.
Correct. Okay, fair enough. You'd build a tunnel or something. A bridge.
But just, yeah, on the water is the answer.
On the waterfront, yeah.
And so home runs could go into the lake.
Maybe where the Red Path building is or like where Chorus Entertainment is.
Yeah, that'd work. Or even like if you want to get out to Ontario Place-ish.
Yeah.
That would work too. Like
okay.
Where Cinesphere is.
Ontario Place.
Have like,
tear that motherfucker
down. That is my answer. If you would have like the Molson Amphitheater, BMO Field, and Rogers whatever... all in a row.
And the OVO practice facility.
And the OVO practice facility there. That's exactly. You would have like the little sports and entertainment neighborhood on
totally.
The water.
Totally.
That's exactly what I would do.
I love it.
That's, in that, like, the
that's your damn
that
answer.
That big parking lot that's sort of like between BMO and Rico.
Yep.
That's where I put it.
Beautiful. The mistake by the lake, they call it.
Yeah.
That's great. I think that's a great, I think that's the right answer. You want to have,
you want to have other stuff around it.
Yes. And if I've learned anything from any other stadium that is nice to be in, is you want to have a city view.
Yeah.
Because baseball gives you a lot of time to look around, and like, you're there for 3 hours and like 40 minutes of it is game action.
And if you have
the rest of it,
if you have Rico and BMO right there with it, you can turn that whole area in, like in Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
they have the whole area around the park is like
yes.
baseball stuff. You could have like TFC stuff, Canada soccer stuff, Marley's stuff. Like you could have a little sports neighborhood there.
I love it.
Great. It'll never happen.
No, of course.
We're stuck with Skydome for like at least 20 more years.
Great. I love it. That's it. Good answers to everything there. We nailed it.
It was great. Great mailbag.
We're getting good at this. One last thing to do, and that is to answer the question.
Blake just asked a great question, not to us, just to himself, that we tailor-made for us.
Let's hear it.
The Raptors ask you to cater their final pitch to Kawhi. What are you serving?
Oh, baby. I would let Serge do it.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
Everybody else is going to bring you... It's the... I can't remember. I want to say it was like Entourage, where they kept bringing him in. It was like Brand and this. Yeah. This is what we are, man. You knew exactly what the Lakers have to offer you.
Yeah.
We got Serge. We got fun.
We got Serge cooking you things you've never eaten before and being kind of goofy.
We're different. It's not that serious. Yeah.
Yeah. From a town that doesn't have like a signature. And then I'd have just like a plate of chicken wings. I know he likes
you know what? Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. Just give him what he wants.
Exactly right. Because you're not going to compete. You're not going to try to like out LA food scene, the LA food scene.
No, and Toronto has a great food scene, but we do not have a signature food.
Correct.
So yeah, sir, I love that.
Great. So that's it. We have one last thing to do, and that is to answer the question on everybody's mind. And that is whether we are sad or not sad. We'll answer that after this. Here we are again at the end, a full day of everything you could possibly ask for in sports news.
Yeah.
We answered the question on everyone's mind. Are we sad or not sad? I will go first.
Do it.
Not sad.
All right.
Watched so much RuPaul's Drag Race.
Isn't it the best?
It is. And listen, I sat here and I've listened to you and Sean and many people in my life tell me that this is the best show out there. And a little bit of that, like, okay, it's camp and you're overdoing it because
it's part of the thing.
Modern society is a thing is either the only thing you love in the world or it sucks, right? There's only two options.
Yeah.
This is the pinnacle of reality competition television.
I cannot watch reality television. I watched this, rewatched it, and I rewatched the season this weekend.
Nothing.
I've seen 100 times.
Nothing is better.
No.
Than RuPaul's
Drag Race. I can't wait for you to get through it all so you have like the full breadth of.
Yes.
Experience to discuss.
Watch season 2, 3, 4, and halfway through season 5 in the course of one long weekend.
So that's how it happens, though. I remember when we started watching it, it was very much like, let's watch nothing else for the next month of our lives.
Season, you can do a season a day. No problem. Boy, oh boy.
I'm excited for you to see season 6, and I'm excited for you to see season 9.
Right.
That's what I'll say.
So much respect for the competitors.
Like it's
I already have so many strong opinions about
it's so it's like I when I was shooting that thing last week, I'd go in the week before for a hair consult, and they tested out putting a wig on me that is like not a complicated wig. There's like two pins in my hair, and I left being like, that sucks. And then like the insane hair pieces and wigs that drag mm-hmm. queens wear and like perform in. It's wild. It's amazing. You're so good.
Serving on-set realness.
Yes. Yeah. But like every, like you watch, you're like that. Yeah, that's really cool. But if you think about it, even for a second, about how hard it is, what they're doing, you're like, wow, you're doing a lot of things at once.
It's incredible. And I immediately feel strongly about the way that some of them present themselves and the priorities some of them have.
I have no fashion sense or fashion consciousness at all.
Yeah.
But I'm in that show. I'm like, I like that.
Yes.
Like I'm aware of what I like on a fashion runway.
So let me ask you a question that Melissa asked me as we watched.
Okay.
Who would be your snatch game? Tough question.
It's a very tough question.
I'll give you mine because I've already thought about it.
Yeah.
So it has to be someone that you like. I think the ideal person is like the Britney Spears, because they want to be able to play them dumb.
Yeah.
And you want to be able to know who it is as soon as you look at them.
And yeah, the best ones are the ones that aren't necessarily 100% accurate.
Yes.
But you take one aspect of their personality and make it a character.
Anyway, I think I would do Celine Dion.
Interesting.
Because you get to wear high fashion still. She wears high fashion. You can go over the top with it, and it's a very easy, like, unique face look.
I will say, without spoilers.
Yes.
There was a Celine Dion.
Yes.
In this newest season, and I think it's harder than you think.
I'm sure.
Because the thing about Celine is, yes, that's all true. I think it's hard to make funny.
Right. You have to. The hardest thing I see in Snatch Game is to find the balance of staying in the character and not being too over the top.
Yes, but also making the jokes, because the jokes still have to exist.
Right.
You can't just. It's just not straight impression. Although that is part of it.
Yeah. Difficult. Snatch Game is difficult.
I've thought about before. I genuinely don't have an answer.
It's tough because you want to say that you have to do somebody very famous, but people win without, like, Little Edie wasn't super famous.
That's true.
I didn't know who that was before.
But great impression.
You're like, oh, great impression.
I've decided that I don't like it when they do other queens on Snatch Game.
What about one who did Visage?
That's okay. But like,
she nailed it.
But like, that's not like, I mean, like other queens who are like contestants on the show.
Oh yeah, no.
It's just like, that seems like a callous to me.
Yeah.
Also, we talked about this the other day too, but like whenever they're in the workroom, it's like, who are you doing? It's like, I'm not sure. Like,
how do you not have,
you know, it's coming up.
How do you not have a
Snatch
Game
ready? They do it every year.
Not knowing how to sew as well. I was like, why did you apply to the show? If you don't know how to sew,
you know it's going to come up.
Anyway.
That's a great question. I'm going to think of that one.
Thank you. Anyway.
Did Melissa have an answer to that?
She didn't, because she said it never applied to her.
Right. That's fair.
Fair enough, I guess.
Totally valid question.
Anyway, yeah, that's my not said. I'm going to go home and watch the rest. Hopefully I'll be done. By the rate we're going, I'll be done by the end of the week.
Great.
As you mentioned, we sort of hit a wall where it was like, all right.
Yeah, you get to a point where all you can... I got to a point where... I
need to stop watching RuPaul's
Drag Race. We have the TV on when we fall asleep.
Yes.
But it's never something we're like watching...
Same.
...intensely. It's like we'll throw on like Brooklyn Nine-Nine for the 12th time or something.
Yes.
Same. I got to a point where after binging Drag Race, that when I would like sort of be falling asleep or wake up like half awake and the TV was still on, my brain would register whatever was on as Drag Race and get really confused.
Mm.
So I'd hear like Andy Samberg speak and be like, that's a weird guest judge.
It is strange. It is strange to go into the movies and it's like, you see women in the movie and you're like, that's a woman. It's not a drag impersonation. That's literally.
Also, you're going to, and the songs are just in your head forever.
Yeah.
Forever.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I can't wait for you to see season 6. Season 6 is so good.
Yeah, lots going on. Season 5 has not disappointed. I love season 4 as well. I think season 4 I liked more than 2 and 3.
Yeah. I think they, for the most part, there's a couple, but like for the most part, it kind of keeps getting better and better.
Some great queens in season 4.
Yes. You're into the like the memeable, memorable.
Yes. It's funny to have not watched the show before, having already seen some of the people. Like I'd already seen Latrice Royale online.
Right.
Without having any idea who it was. Love Latrice. Latrice, easy top 3 for me. Anyway.
Interesting.
That's my sad, not sad.
Yeah, when you're done, we'll have to have our
top 5. Of course, it feels wrong to rank them now.
Yeah, because you're missing
out. You would be like, well, there's like 3 dozen queens you have no idea about.
Exactly, yeah.
Anyway.
All right. I'm going to go not sad. Also, I worked as an actor last week.
That's
for the
like
first time in a little bit. And it was fucking awesome. It was just the sights and sounds and smells of a set I really missed, which I didn't realize till I got there. And just like I remember when I was younger and I was working consistently, also because I was younger and the kids are idiots, but like the sort of the scenes where you're not really doing much or you're just in the background watching other people, I used to always feel not resentful, but like bored.
Totally.
And like, or even just like waiting around to shoot, they'd be like, ugh, come on. But being on this set specifically, obviously has like, was very cool to do. But those like waiting around moments just felt, it was easier for me now to sort of like just watch people do their job. Like even like crew guys, like
totally
the setups and the lighting setups. And even like I was looking at some of the, cause we were in one of those like big warehouse studios. They built like a 1970s Capitol building inside of. Oh,
that's so cool.
It's so cool. And just like walking around this set where they built like the old, like the hallway of, I guess like the House of Representatives in like 1972.
This sounds like an awesome.
It's very cool. But it's just like so meticulously recreated. And even just like the way the wiring that people plug things in are set up, it's like, man, there are so many things on a, I've been on sets for my entire life, and there are so many things on a set I have no idea how they're done.
It's incredible, isn't it?
No idea.
So
like,
cool.
It's just like, huh. All right. And just like watching professionals do their job.
Yeah.
Is always really interesting. And I'm finding it easier to learn as an actor from watching other people like act and just like how you sort of carry yourself on a set. Like I know how to do that. Obviously,
of course.
Doing it forever, but like there is a level of it that you can just kind of see and take in, and just the whole experience and atmosphere, even though it's just for a day, was great. And, felt nice. Felt nice to like be like, right, this is why I like torturing myself and doing this shit.
Does it a little bit now feel like you're doing sort of a drag performance? Male drag.
When they tried the wig on me, yes.
That's all I can think about now. It's like you're in a character and you're doing it.
It is definitely like, I don't know if it feels that way, but the thoughts definitely entered my mind. Like in the makeup trailer, and just like, that's the other thing. Like, I don't like the feeling of just like things on my face, like, like, you know, like mud masks or any of that. Like I just hate how it feels. And then like having the tiny bit of makeup doesn't bother me because I'm doing it forever. So it's like, it's just, I'm used to it. But then thinking about being like, man, that shit's just like caked on when you're a drag queen.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know how they do it.
Drive me nuts.
Sorry, I'm trying not to bring everything back.
No, you have to.
I can't. Brain is broken.
Yeah. It's Kawhi and Drag Race. And that's our world for the next few weeks.
It truly is.
Which, you know what? There's worse.
Could be
worse
a lot.
Worlds.
Could be a lot worse. That's a good place to leave it. We are going to be back. We're back on doing it every week.
Yeah.
That was just a nice little break. Sean has been on vacation.
Sean's still on vacation.
Earned it very well. Clayton Hansler did a great job today sitting in and producing the show.
Thanks, Clay. Dylan, as always, does a great job.
Dylan, as always, the consummate professional. Dylan on the ones and twos. We are going to be back next week. We're shooting for Monday.
Yeah.
When we will...
Hopefully we'll know Kawhi by then.
God help us if we don't know Kawhi by then. Holy moly. If we don't know Kawhi by then, it's going to be a real rough scene in here.
Yeah.
I'm going to be not well. The two words I would use to describe how I feel if we don't know Kawhi by next Monday. But we will. So don't worry about it. We're going to have Kawhi Watch solved next Monday. We're going to have illustrious guests. We're going to have a great time. We'll be refreshed and we'll have watched Drag Race again.
Good luck to the Raptors, and don't fuck it up is what I would say. The best tagline.
The best tagline in television history.
It's amazing. It's perfect. We were talking about this. Like I could talk about Drag Race for a whole podcast just about this.
I think we will one day.
Yeah, I think so too. But just like the little things that show gets right.
Yes.
Like the puns and the...
Congratulations.
The taglines are so well thought out. Even just like the start your engines, may the best one... Like it's just so...
Yes.
Well done.
Agreed. Good luck and don't fuck it up is... That's what every other tagline is secretly saying.
Yeah.
To just say it is fucking brilliant.
Yes.
So to Masai Ujiri in their final meeting with Kawhi, good luck and don't fuck it up. And folks... We thank you very much for listening to Sportsfeld.
Sportsfeld!